Randy Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer, on News Talk STL. This is News Talk STL.
Good morning. It's 2 degrees according to my AccuWeather forecast. I don't know if that's right or not. Is that what you're registering there, Jerome?
Yeah, it was absolutely freezing this morning.
Yeah. I had a bad circumstance last Sunday. You know, my wife was out of town. She was with the grandkids and my daughter-in-law. The son-in-law is out on his last foray into Green Beret training. We don't know what happens. They leave for 4 to 6 weeks, at a time. And they're doing like POW simulation or something. We never know all the detail. We can't know, of course. But it sounds pretty harrowing. And I know we talked to Representative Dave Griffith from the Cole County area in mid-Missouri yesterday. And he was a Green Beret. And we talked a little bit about it. It's pretty harrowing training. So we certainly honor our military guys, whether they're special forces, regular service. It doesn't matter. It's a sacrifice. Anyway, Helene was out there, and last Sunday, remember, was just an unbelievable Arctic blast. I started out to church, and my diesel truck, after I had it plugged in, I had the block truck plugged in, I dumped triple dosing of the anti-gel stuff in, thought I'd done everything, and I headed out to church, and about, a mile away, I get low fuel pressure. Oh, no. Next thing you know, it's like low engine power. So now I'm in limp mode. And I pulled into O'Reilly AutoZone, one of those, and they plugged it in. They said, oh, it's probably a fuel filter. I didn't get home, so I had to get towed. And luckily, there was a place open actually on a Sunday afternoon that... If you're an auto shop owner, there is a lane for some business that you wouldn't imagine. It's equivalent to like the snow blading business. You know, guys have blades that they put on their truck and they make hay when it snows, clearing parking lots. I was desperate. No one was open. I finally got in, and it was a fuel filter. So they had to put a fuel filter in. That got it. So for those of you who have diesels, the message is, if you are heading into a winter, it's a good idea to change that fuel filter, because it was all gelled up. It was like white jelly when they pulled it out, and it just wasn't letting fuel through, even though the fuel wasn't gelled. The fuel filters gunk up over time in a diesel, and you got to change it before the season comes, and then you should be okay. That's my mechanic advice. It's about worth what you pay for it, but that's what I was told anyway. So be careful. Make sure your batteries are in good shape. And, you know, this kind of weather can be very, very devastating, not only just with a schedule disruption, but more. If you get caught out and, you know, you're far away from civilization and you stall, it could be ugly. So be careful. That ever happened to you, Jerome? You ever get caught like out away from civilization with a stall?
Oh, yeah. I like to go trekking, and I like to go do what's called urban exploration. So you basically just go to abandoned parts of town, try to see what's out there. And back in Illinois, we actually have a few ghost towns, and I left my headlights on so we could see what we were doing. And I forgot to keep my car running. So what ended up happening was my battery died on us, and we had no cell phone signal. We were basically SOL until a random car came by and helped jump us after an hour and a half. We were freaking out. Man. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. But
so what's... Yeah. What's this called? Trekking?
So it's urban exploration, kind of. It's not quite where you go in the middle of the woods, but there's a lot of areas that are just completely abandoned. You know, maybe towns that something happened, and like Caro, Illinois, for example, would kind of qualify for that. It's very, a little bit run down. Not very many people live there anymore. So we just go to these abandoned places or these, out of the way places, and we just kind of explore, look around. Take some photos. Oh. Yeah.
Wow. Hey, that's cool. Do you put it on your Instagram or that kind of thing?
I should have. I'm not really a big social media user, so for some reason that just never occurred to me. But yeah, the next time I make some of these travels, I'll definitely have to start maybe a blog or something.
Yeah, that's neat. Hey, well, let's talk a little bit about Davos. Now, remember, Davos is this organization started by Klaus Schwab. He's a German engineer. We're going to start the World Economic Forum 52 years ago. We know what's good for you. We're going to show you the papers. So Kerry and Gore and All the wealthiest people and political movers and shakers, they gather in Davos, Switzerland. I think Jesse reported the other night that many of them, this is a good opportunity for escorts in big air finger quotes, $700 an hour escorts. That's a new world order of a different type, if you know what I mean. I think they're ordering up some interesting things, and it ain't from room service. At any rate, I was thrilled, elated, excited. What other adjective can I use? To hear Dr. Kevin Roberts, he's a professor of, I don't know what he's a professor of, down at University of Austin, but more importantly, he's the president of the Heritage Foundation, University of Texas, Austin, I should say. He is in the belly of the beast, Davos, Switzerland, among the most progressive people, globalist. We know what's good for you. Shut up and do what our bidding says. And he talked about the presidential election in the United States of America this cycle. Listen.
The kind of person, and I'll be candid here because I think I've been invited here to be candid. The kind of person who will come into the next conservative administration is going to be governed by one principle, and that is destroying the grasp that political elites and unelected technocrats have over the average person. And if I may, I will be candid and say that the agenda that every single member of the administration needs to have is to compile a list of everything that's ever been proposed at the World Economic Forum and object all of them wholesale. Anyone not prepared to do that and take away this power of the unelected bureaucrats and give it back to the American people is unprepared to be part of the next conservative administration.
There you go. I mean, he basically nailed it. And he went on there. It was a long talk. And I think it was a panel discussion. But here in the background, you see on the green screen, you know, on the background of the stage, you see World Economic Forum. And he's basically telling these people that are out of touch, absolutely out of touch with you and I walking out of our grocery store with two plastic bags of stuff that used to cost, $12, now cost 25. Thanks, Joe. On the heels of the research going on in China, the pandemic, the World Health Organization, all of these global organizations that have their head up their rears. And they're led by these technocrats who claim to know what's best for us. And this guy says, look, the successful leader in the West needs to just reject everything you people are about. Yay. Good. Where's the cheers button? That's what we need. You know, I mean, we need more people like that to call out truth to power. Bill Eigel is going to be joining us in just a few minutes. Senator Eigel is running for governor, of course. And wherever Bill goes, controversy follows because he's in people's faces about property taxes and lately initiative petitions. And he's got some strong feelings about conservative governance. And I'm going to ask him about the fact that there are people that have told me that they think that him and his Freedom Caucus members have burned bridges and they're not going to be able to get anything done. I've got to ask him. Bill's a friend of mine. So is Cindy O'Loughlin. Bill and Cindy had it out on the Senate floor yesterday. Was it yesterday or day before? Holy cow. We got some sound on that. We're going to ask him about it. And Bill answers the tough questions. He does. And I appreciate that. We'll have to ask him how the campaign's going. But more importantly, what's going on the Senate and if anything's going to get done. Latest is that the Freedom Caucus members have stated that they're not going to approve any. They're going to filibuster gubernatorial appointments unless they get initiative petition reform. We need initiative petition reform. We need something to happen to prevent this constitutional amendment from being on the ballot that will allow abortion with no restrictions until God knows when. Maybe you're 2 years old. You can, quote, abort the baby. I don't know what it's going to allow. Just what happened in Kansas, akin to what happened in Ohio. The people that are pushing the pro-life agenda are getting nothing. They're getting the opposite. And this is a very important discussion among conservatives and among pro-life people. Again, it's from here to there. What is the right route from here? Progressive, woke, socialist, culturally depraved America to a culturally appropriate traditional values, small government, but protecting the life of the citizens, including the unborn, the pre-born citizens. How do we get from here to there successfully without shooting ourselves in the feet? That's I think the problem that many people have with the what is referred to as the far right. It used to be closer to the center in America. Now it is the far right because the former center of America is now left. And it's that raises the question, can you change the culture with political policy, with governmental interdiction? I don't know that we can. I think, like Andrew Breitbart said, Breitbart. Andrew Breitbart said that culture is upstream from politics, and he's right. And Shapiro mentions that all the time. I agree. You can't legislate morality. You may be able to tame people's immoral. The human condition is basically a depraved, immoral one. I'm a Nietzscheist there. It's only the good book and the revelation of God's law and our attempt to abide by it that puts any curbs on us, along with whatever governance that we under that edict, the cultural mandate elect. Well, if you have a culture that's depraved, and it is, how can you expect your politicians and civil society to do anything but follow the depravity of the electorate? I don't know. Maybe Bill Igel has an answer. he answers the tough questions. That's what I say. And I will ask him the tough questions when we talk with him in just a little bit here on News Talk STL 101.9 94.1. You won't want to miss that. And coming up at 8 o'clock, we talk with Andrew Art Arthur, who's a former immigration judge. And we'll talk to him about what's been going on at the border. Why is it suddenly getting better in this election season? Are they manipulating things that they could have for 3 years and now they're doing it because politically expedient? What are the latest Border Patrol numbers in terms of border crossings? They've been delayed in releasing those. That is December's results here in January. And then Tim Jones, our own Tim Jones, joins us at 8:25. So we have a packed show the rest of the time for you. Hope that you'll keep it here. I am loaded with coffee. Hope you get locked and loaded with coffee. We'll see you in a little bit.
Of any legislature anywhere in the country. Why not do it today?
Well, 3/4 of our time is spent listening to you.
A bill other than IP reform. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So first of all, I'm going to vote against that amendment.
I bet you are. Yes. No, they will vote against it because they are against you coming in here and trampling every other senator's ability to
We're not
move
trampling. See,
forward.
Once again, you... And there it is again, the daily reminder of my campaign. Thank you,
Senator.
Well,
we don't need a daily reminder because we have you to remind us every day.
You keep talking about me. I just want to pass IP reform.
You just want to be governor.
Well, that was a little back and forth between Senator Bill Igel, of course, from the St. Charles area here in Metro St. Louis, and Cindy O'Loughlin, who is the majority leader of the Senate in Missouri. And there's ongoing rancor. It started the very opening day of the Senate. It continues from last year's, I think most would agree, objectively dysfunctional session. And so we're going to be talking to Senator Igel here in a minute and just try to get his take on what's going on. It's been reported that gubernatorial announcements nominations are going to be filibustered, and Senator Igel joins us now. Bill, how you doing?
Hey, I can hear you, Randy. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
There we go. Hey, so hey, thanks for being on. I know things have been really fast and furious there in the Senate as we've gotten off to a quite turbulent start. I don't know if you heard that little montage that we played, but there was quite a back and forth between you and Cindy O'Loughlin. Did you get a chance to hear that, Bill?
I did not hear it when you played it just now, but I tell you what, I was there when it happened. So,
yeah, I know you were.
It was quite.
So you say you want to have initiative petition reform, but you said I thought you said you were going to vote against the initiative petition amendment. That seems to be cognitively dissonant. Explain.
Oh, so no. So what she was talking about during that point in the inquiry, she was telling me on the floor that she was going to offer a substitute motion that instead of going to initiative petition reform, we were going to go to a tort bill that she would make the motion to go towards instead. So I was telling her that I would not vote for the amendment for her motion to go to something other than initiative petition reform.
Okay. It was that. Okay. So, what's the problem? How come we can't all get along? We all have elephants on our t-shirts. We all go to Lincoln days. Why can't we get along, Bill?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think a lot of people in Missouri have been asking this question for years, and the answer is that the words coming out of the mouths of our leadership right now don't match their actions. And unfortunately, because there's been a dissonance between their words and their actions, not just this year, but in several years in a row, the result of that is that we're not getting the big red Republican priorities that we all pretty much agree are indeed a priority done in the legislature. So IP reform, initiative petition reform, is one of those items. So initiative petition reform coming into last year was identified by the Senate Republican caucus as the number one priority to get done. And of course, Randy, you're familiar with the efforts of the pro-abortion crowd to try to instill abortion and abortion rights back into our Constitution this year. So the Republican caucus was very forthright, and I think a lot of Republicans agreed with us all over the state that we wanted to get that done. It was the number one priority. Well, even though we have one of the longest regular sessions in the entire country, leadership found a way to maneuver the bills so that they never got done and they never reached the ballot. So after a long conversation back with the public, who was very disappointed in that, we came into this session expecting movement to happen on initiative petition early and often in the session. And yet, as you and I are talking here this morning on the third week, after 3 weeks of session, the pro tem, Caleb Rowden, has not even referred any of the 9 initiative petition bills that were filed by multiple members of the Republican caucus down in Jefferson City. So once again, they're saying that they believe that they're committed to doing IP reform. And yet here we are, the first month is almost over and they haven't even referred the bills. So instead of waiting like we did last year until the middle of the session or the end of session, hoping that they're going to do the right thing, myself, a few others, and the members of the Freedom Caucus are being far more aggressive about putting them on account that if they're not going to push these bills forward, we're going to start making motions on the floor of the Senate that'll put them on record for whether or not they're going to support it. And when I made that motion to bring IP reform directly to the floor on Thursday, almost 18 Republicans voted against it. So the dissonance that you're talking about is really in place with a lot of the Republicans that are saying one thing, but then they're doing something else. And, you know, Randy, you know that Cindy O'Loughlin has been a friend of mine for a long time. But I got to tell you, it was tough. It was difficult to watch her completely come unglued on the floor of the Senate this week. To see Cindy O'Loughlin, who is somebody I respect and admire, reduced to nothing more than personal insults and just completely lost her composure, was shouting at me, was yelling at me, calling me all sorts of names because she was very upset that I had, I guess, the gall to demonstrate to the whole state that they weren't really serious about getting these things done. She really didn't handle it well, and I think the implications of that are not good for the rest of the Senate as we move forward.
So I think in fairness, we always should try to give our generally ideologically aligned colleagues in the GOP/conservative movement, you know, some grace and the benefit of the doubt. What would be the argument in favor of doing other things ahead of this? I mean, why not acquiesce to the desires of the Freedom Caucus? Has this become just a you know what match? Or is there some strategy here? Is there some strategy that might be in play?
Well, I can tell you that for the members of the Freedom Caucus, it's about policy. And, you know, I think that we did give them a tremendous amount of grace and an opportunity to demonstrate that they were going to work to get these bills done. We gave them all of last year. We gave them an entire legislative session. And when we gave them an entire legislative session last year, that meant that the first time that an IP reform bill came to the floor of the Senate was not until after spring break. And then we came into this session and we've given them 3 more weeks folks in this session, even as the pro-abortion folks are putting together, they put together this week $1 million to get abortion back into our Constitution. We still gave our leadership 3 weeks to demonstrate that they were going to start moving these bills quickly, and they still did nothing. So, yes, you're absolutely right. We should give our colleagues grace, but there's also a point where the status quo, and I think this is the trap that Senator O'Loughlin has really fallen into. You know, when Cindy first came into the legislature, Randy, you know, I couldn't have been more of a fan of Cindy. She was a member of the conservative caucus. If you looked at her voting record measured by the American Conservative Union, she voted conservative and voted Republican 90% of the time. She was one of the most conservative senators, not just in words, but in actions in the Missouri Senate. And then, you know, if you look at her most recent year as the floor leader of this state, her grading record has dropped from 90% down to the low 60s%. So unfortunately, this breaks my heart. I had high hopes for Cindy. I had high expectations for Cindy as floor leader. I voted for her as floor leader. But instead of being that conservative warrior that is pushing this conservative legislation forward, she has assimilated into the status quo. She is now busy defending inaction on the IP reform. She is voting with the Democrats to kill the motions that the Freedom Caucus is making on the Senate floor to move these things quickly through the process. And now, when called to account on the Senate floor, she has completely lost her composure and is reduced to nothing more than a very angry person who does little more than insult her colleagues on the Senate floor, which is just awful. I mean, I think she called me everything from a narcissist to a terrorist to, I mean, this is a really sad state of affairs. And it breaks my heart to see her at this place, yeah, to be so overwhelmed by the responsibilities that we've put on her, that this is where she's at right now. I don't want to see this happen to Cindy O'Loughlin. It makes me wonder if we're not going to need new leadership in the Senate chamber before the end of session. But I don't celebrate, and I find no joy in what's happened to Cindy O'Loughlin, as she has really descended into a very dark place as the floor leader in the Senate.
Well, Bill, I admire your resolve and the Freedom Caucus's policy stance and resolve. I also think, though, that we live in a society where people represent different interests and districts, and I still wonder. You mentioned that 18 other senators voted against the proposal to get the IP thing on the floor there. Why would, I mean, what we're hearing in the background, those of us who are more on the just observer side, we're observing this. We want to see everyone get to property taxes, IP reform, education mm-hmm. choice. I mean, everyone yep. has a nominal yep. goal that's shared, but we watch this, and what we hear is that, and this is from people inside the Capitol building, Bill, that aren't elected officials. They say, what I'm hearing is, quote, the Freedom Caucus, and sometimes it's you, quote, have burned bridges, close quote. What is your response?
You know, I'll tell you, my purpose, my job down there in Jefferson City is to represent my constituents and do everything I can to pass the policies that I said I would when I was in campaign season. I've never backed away from that. Now, I'm in my eighth year, and I know that when I go out, and I'm pretty bold and pretty aggressive about wanting to pass these big red Republican things. And Randy, you know that there are a lot of those big red Republican things that have not passed. And they haven't passed because there's some sort of, I'm being too mean to the other senators down there in Jefferson City. It's not that they haven't passed because, the senators in the Missouri Senate have such thin skin that they can't get beyond, the fact that we're going to work towards passing good policy. They haven't passed because too many Republicans who say one thing in campaign season are just going down there and doing something else once they get into office. The reality is we could have brought initiative petition reform to the floor of the Senate on Thursday, and if it would have made it through those motions that we were offering, we could have brought it up on Monday and sent it over to the House by Tuesday. That is a fact. Mm-hmm. Now, whatever these senators think, that if they don't like me personally because I'm bold about my stances that we're going to get these things done, that's a cop-out. That's an excuse. They have a responsibility to vote on policy, not on their personal animosities that they may hold against other senators. And I tell you what, the fact that I think that there are senators doing that is exactly, Randy, why so many Republicans are furious with Jefferson City. I mean, to think that we're not going to get initiative petition reform done because there's some senator that doesn't like another senator in Jefferson City. We're not going to cut personal property taxes because there's a senator that holds a personal vendetta against another senator in Jefferson City. That is exactly politics as usual. And I tell you, Cindy O'Loughlin, and I hate this, I hate to say this because I helped Cindy O'Loughlin get elected. But Cindy O'Loughlin is now engaging in exactly that. She's literally saying that she doesn't want to vote for these motions that would get these things done because she doesn't want to be seen as giving in. Well, what is giving in if it's for the benefit of passing the big red ideas that we all said we would support in campaign season? The thing that reunites the Republican Party is not whether we like the guy next to us personally. The thing that unites us is whether we're going to stand together and fight for the rights and fight for the things that we said we would in campaign season, which are in the GOP platform. Right now, Cindy O'Loughlin, 18 other Republicans had a chance to do that on Thursday. They voted no, and then they lost their composure out on the Senate floor. And I'll tell you, Randy, if I had lost my composure the way Cindy did, if I had called Cindy a series of terrible names out on the Senate floor, lost my composure, I have to wonder, would you be asking me, what was I doing losing my composure and allowing the conversation to reduce to nothing more than personal insults and barbs? I don't know if you're going to get a chance to ask Cindy O'Loughlin that, but I think there may be a little bit of a double standard here. Everything I said on Thursday had everything to do with policy. Cindy O'Loughlin voted against that policy. 18 Republicans voted against that policy. When are they going to come on your show and explain to the people of this state why they voted against passing initiative petition reform this week when the pro-abortion forces have put together $1 million to install abortion back in our Constitution?
All right. Well, I intend to ask Cindy that because it's an ongoing of ongoing interest to everyone listening to this program and conservatives across the state. But again, there has to be another side. I don't know whether it has to do with campaign funding, whether it has to be some other argument. But I mean, you both are good people. You both are smart people. You both want the same thing. I don't know why we're not getting there. I mean, well, Caleb Rowden is not a slouch. He's a fervent Christian. He's a good man who wants to preserve life. I don't know why he would be on the other side of the fence. It doesn't make sense.
So Randy, when you ask me, what am I doing to pass these bills out? Here's what I've done. I filed the legislation. When the legislation didn't get referred, I offered amendments on the floor that were voted down by Republicans. That's what I've done. When you ask Cindy the question, what has she done? She's called a bunch of people names out on the Senate floor. She has voted against the motions that would have brought those things to the floor. She hasn't put any pressure on Caleb Rowden to refer those bills. And by the way, at the end of all of that filibustering on Thursday afternoon and Thursday evening, when Caleb Rowden withdrew his motion on the gubernatorial appointments, he could have made a motion right then and there to refer every one of those initiative petition reforms. And yet he didn't refer one of them, not one of them. And so, again, you're asking me why my actions are matching my words. I want to pass IP reform. Cindy O'Loughlin's actions are not matching her words. She says she wants to pass IP reform, but she voted against the motion that would have done it. Caleb Rowden says he wants to pass initiative petition reform, but every single day that he could have referred those bills, he hasn't done it. He actually asked me on the floor of the Senate, well, we didn't refer these bills last year until January 17th. He's right about that. And then they didn't get heard in committee until a month later. And then they didn't pass the session because they didn't come up on the floor until 2 months after that. So our call, the Freedom Caucus's call, to be moving this through the system quickly, even if it's extraordinarily quickly, is an incredibly reasonable one. And the fact that all we get in response from our colleagues is people calling us names and voting against our motions, I mean, I can't even get my head around the fact that I'm the one being called to account here, and I'm happy to explain it. When is Cindy going to answer for the fact that they haven't done anything on initiative petition reform for the past month? They didn't get it done because of their failures in leadership last year, and they keep pointing the finger at everybody but themselves.
All right. Hey, well, Bill, look, I told the audience before you came on that this was that you answered the tough questions. We've asked the tough questions. You've answered them forthrightly. And we will then refer the matter to Cindy O'Loughlin. I'm going to bring this matter up to her, and we're going to see if she'll come on and talk about it. And I imagine she will. So we'll see what happens. Hey, thanks very much, my friend. I appreciate it. We respect so much your fervent support for these issues. And I just pray to God that we can get these things across the finish line one way or another. Thanks, Senator Bill Igel. Appreciate it. Fired up. Bill's fired up. And maybe Tim can help us extract a little bit of this when he joins us. Tim Jones joins us in the next hour at 8:25. We'll be having an interlude talking about immigration, what's going on down at the border at 8 o'clock. Virginia Cruda coming up here on the Randy Tobler Show. You'll want to archive that one. And if you haven't heard it, the whole thing, you're just joining us, you want to listen to the podcast when that is up. What, tomorrow? Will that be up tomorrow, Jerome, later today?
So for anybody listening or just tuning in now, we usually get the Spotify, the podcast version up on your Spotify account by noon. So you don't have to wait till tomorrow.
Okay,
just give us a little bit of time after the show and we'll have it up and ready to go.
Sounds good. And we will reach out to Cindy O'Loughlin, see if we can get her on the air here next Saturday. You're listening to the Randy Tobler Show on News Talk STL 101.9 94.1. Woo, fireworks, they be a-flying. That was conversation that was pretty fiery, wasn't it? Welcome back to the program. Virginia Cruda joins us now. And if you can play clip 6 there, Jerome, for me. Go ahead and play that. This is James Carville. I hope it's James Carville.
To the Drudge Report, and I think it'll still be up. There's a story that talks about Trump having hand cuts, and you can link to it. They don't look like cuts to me. They look like sores. And I've asked a number of MDs what medical condition manifests itself through hand sores, and the answer is immediate and unanimous: secondary syphilis. All right, I think there's a good chance this man has the clap, and I'm not being particularly secretive about it. I am texting the photo. You can link to it. It's in some operation called the Daily Mail. It's some British thing. It's probably a Fleet Street rag, but. You know, maybe the picture was doctored or whatever, but maybe the story will go somewhere, maybe it won't. But I'm telling you, at 1 o'clock Eastern, I'm humping this thing like a young dog on old furniture.
Okay, so there's James Carville, of course, the operative in so many Democrat, national, and other local, regional elections for decades. There was a thing, and just to set you up here, I don't know if you saw it, but the Drudge Report had a picture of Donald Trump with his hand in the air and on his forefinger and the area between his forefinger and his index finger and the thumb, some ulcer-looking lesions. And James Carville and others were claiming that, oh my goodness, is this syphilis? Now, first of all, that's not what secondary syphilis would look like typically. I wonder if James Carville might have tertiary syphilis maintaining such a preposterous notion. It's ridiculous. Virginia with us now, Jerome?
Yeah, we got her.
Virginia, what about that flap where James Carville said that Donald Trump may have syphilis? I mean, what, this the conversation's in the gutter politically in this country.
Well, I mean, hasn't it been though forever? The conversation has, I mean, this is, keep in mind that Thomas Jefferson called John Adams a hermaphrodite. So, I mean, I don't ask me how I pulled this out of my head, right? And
I don't know. How'd you get with that one?
during the same campaign, Adams had a competing newspaper put out an article declaring that if a libertine like Jefferson were elected, the streets would run red with the blood of your murdered daughters. So I don't think political discourse has changed much over time. We just see more of it, I think, because 24-hour news cycle and, you know. But here's what I will say. I think James Carville, when handicapping the Democrats, is a useful tool. Because he steps off a little bit when he tries to talk about Republicans. No, when he talks about Democrats, he gets it right. He says, look, you guys are using these terms like Latinx that nobody in the Latin community cares about. You know, you're using these terms that only academics are using in papers and expecting the public to think that you're not talking down to them. The whole foray into woke politics, he has a problem with. And so I think he's right on a couple of things that Democrats are doing wrong. But as far as when he talks about Republican, he's got kind of a blind spot where he gets to talking about Republicans and dirty is the only way he knows to play.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, so in other words, he's a little bit of a good conscience sitting on the shoulder of the Democrats.
If they would listen to him, yeah. And I'm kind of glad they don't because it makes it harder for them to win. But but if if they were going to listen to him, they'd probably, like, he's kind of fighting back against the squads and the their insistence on, you know, certain identity politics type things. And he's right about that the average American doesn't care about those things. So when he's talking to Democrats about what they could do better, he's probably right. But when it comes to actually talking about what's going on the right, he's so anti everything on the right that it just all comes out as, well, they're horrible people. And here's another example of them being horrible people.
Yeah, I get it. No, they should listen to him if they cared about their fortunes, but I don't know. They seem to be ignorant to that. Hey, why don't you play? You know, I've been watching Davos. I'm sure you have been too. Perhaps you caught Paul Ryan at Davos. Why is Paul Ryan at Davos? That's a whole other discussion.
That's a great question.
And his thoughts about the upcoming presidential election. And, you know, a lot of people reject Paul Ryan, you know, out of hand. But remember, he represented a purple district. And in order to get elected, you can't be as red in a purple district or else you won't get elected. But all that aside, here's what he had to say about the presidential election.
Look, a lot's going to happen between now and November. Nothing's linear in politics these days. There's a zigzag. So who knows is the point. Biden is so weak that even Donald Trump pulls ahead of him. But look at Nikki Haley's polling. I mean, she beats him by like 12 points in head-to-head polls. So right. I would prefer a candidate who I think would be a good president and who I know is going to win. And by the way, give us more seats in Congress. That's Nikki Haley. Well, my preferences aren't bubbling through the Republican Party right now. But let's just wait and see what happens in New Hampshire and see if this inevitability narrative, which has credence now coming out of Iowa, if it sticks past New Hampshire. And if Nikki Haley wins New Hampshire, then I think we got a race in our hands. So I want to wait and see what happens there.
Well, you mean fair comments, Virginia, or is he off base?
Okay, well, are you asking me is it fair or do I like what he said? Because those are two different things.
Yes.
Okay, so I think it's fair. I think it's fair because, one, in head-to-head polls right now, Nikki Haley does do better against Biden than Trump does. He's not wrong about that. Now, Trump is trying to paint that as an outlier and say, well, you know, there was this one poll where it said that she was better, but in all the other polls... Well, the thing is, it's not an outlier. There were a few polls that said that. And there's even been at least one poll out of New Hampshire that had Nikki Haley beating him in the New Hampshire primary. And it wasn't a poll done by Nikki Haley. You know, it was a poll from, oh, I can't remember who did it, but it was like CBS or somebody did a poll this past week. And it was a reputable organization. Now, her margin of beating Trump in the primary was within the margin of error. But here's the thing. If you look at all these polls where Trump is beating Biden head to head, in most of those polls, he is either right at or inside the margin of error. So what you're saying is, okay, Trump beats Biden, you know, 51 to 48, right? But the margin of error is 3%. So they could have tied. Or Biden could have beaten him maybe by a little bit. In a poll where the margin of error is 3%, Nikki Haley's beaten Biden by 6-7%. So she's outside that margin of error, which means she likely wins even without that factoring in. Now, that said, is Nikki Haley the best candidate? We don't know. We got to watch how the rest of the primary plays out. So I think that he's right that, one, it looks like a one-person race right now after Iowa, because Trump won that decisively. New Hampshire is a different ballgame, and Nikki Haley is popular there. She's also put a lot of money into New Hampshire. And so we need to see if that pays off. I think it's worth seeing if that pays off. You still have people saying that DeSantis has got a shot, but he was in a distant third in New Hampshire polling to begin with. So we got to, but as long as they're in the race, we have to let it play out. I think that he's right to say that. We have to let it play out. We have to let it see, because as long as they're in the race, you can't discount the fact that they're going to draw votes.
I agree. And I think
and it's going to change the calculus
to keep Donald Trump accountable and maybe within the lanes of an electable majority. All right. We thank you, Virginia. We'll be talking to you next week.
All right. Sounds good.
Art Arthur and Tim Jones next hour. Stay there.